Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
All on blitz by Clemson up the middle. They hit Burrow as he throws, and it is caught in the end zone for a touchdown by Thaddeus Moss.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
There's two very important points I want to make today. I have higher standards for the city and the franchise. And I'm going above and beyond MLB's penalty. Today, I have made the decision to dismiss A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
The snap, the knee, and the Tigers of LSU. A team of destiny and a team for ages. Celebrate on the field here tonight in New Orleans inside the Superdome. Capturing the national title and snapping a 29-game win streak for Dabo Swinney and Clemson.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson in with you on this Tuesday afternoon.
Woo!
We're already in the rumor mill for Tom Brady stuff.
I think that might be my favorite story of the day.
A report from our sister station in Boston says the Brady suite at Gillette Stadium has been cleaned out in a way that perhaps it never has been before.
They've never cleaned it like that before, God. AKA he's gone.
We're really running with that.
You're damn right
we are. Housekeeping threw away all the trash cans, and we've never seen that before.
You're damn right we are. That's like right up the lines of whenever a player is a free agent and you get the folks that stock their house to see if it's up for sale,
or that
there's a for sale sign,
switch
in our
all
front
their
yard.
Pictures on social media.
Yeah, they unfollowed all the team accounts.
Julio did that. Julio Jones 2 years ago was in a contract dispute, and he was a year into a new deal, wanted more money, and took off everything Atlanta Falcon related. And everyone's like, Julio's gonna get out, he's leaving. It's been 2 years, he's still there.
He's not following anybody anymore. I don't know, I'm a little concerned.
But to be fair, on this kind of rumor stuff, it does from time to time end up being accurate. The one that I can think of is a local one, LaMarcus. Remember, he moved out of...
Whose house was it?
Was it Batum's Damon Stoudemire's or something? He moved out of somebody's house.
It was some... I feel like it was a former Blazers house that he was living
in. He was renting it, and they spotted him moving, and everybody was like,
uh-oh.
That turned out to be right.
And I remember initially the reports were, calm down. He's just moving. Okay, there's nothing going on here. Everything's going to be all right. Are you moving the computers around?
It's really weird because I like to lay back with these new mics, and I like seeing you, and then I got a computer in my way. So anyways, the rumor mill is going for Tom Brady already. I had my first. No, that's not true. I had one of my first. I've had a few real old person moment yesterday.
Okay.
So
I want to know if it was the same one as me, because I had a really bad one.
It's probably maybe. I don't know. It depends what you did after work. So
now, is it like being old as in you did something that an old person would do, or something that made you feel old?
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, both. Both apply.
Okay.
So I get the kiddos, get home. The wife's already making dinner. I'm like, this is great. I just missed everything in the very beginning. I missed the Trump applause. I missed the national anthem.
No matter your politics, that was really weird.
They were cheering him?
No, not the cheering.
He decided to crash that party?
No, it was like the whole walking thing was really weird.
The walking out to
so
just stand
came
on the
out
sideline?
He walked out onto the field and they like announced him. And the whole thing last night felt like it took 8 hours. And this was like an hour of it. And he like walked out to the 20-yard line. And then it was like, okay, now we're going to play the national anthem. And then they slowly start walking forward, but he was with like other military members but they were walking in front of him, and it was like he didn't know he was supposed to be walking with them. So they would walk 5 yards, and then him and Melania would slowly walk up.
Following them.
And it went on for like 25 yards, it felt like.
Why
are we just not, they just stand there and sing the anthem? Why are we going for a walk right now?
Well, you know, look.
It was a little weird.
I think every president has parts of their egos that they need scratched once in a while, right? Like Obama loved to go to some hoops games. He loved to throw out a first pitch. That was what Obama liked.
Oh, they all got their things, yeah.
Trump likes to be cheered, and he chose the right venue because he went to New Orleans, and, you know, South Carolina team versus Louisiana team. odds are probably in his favor. He's going to get good applause. You know what he didn't go to last year?
He did not go to the title in Santa Clara last year.
He did not go to California, which is obvious why.
Yeah, I get though. I mean, I get why he wants to be there and you want the applause and all that stuff. It was just like, what is happening right now? Me and some buddies were texting in a group chat like, what did... Is he just,
that leaked? Normally that stuff gets leaked.
That he's showing up. I knew he was going to be there. Oh, I'd seen a thing that came out 2 days prior that he had intended on his schedule. It was put down that him and Melania were going to be there.
Okay. Mm. I missed all that.
So I walk in, I missed all that. Same thing, Swag. I missed it. And then I caught right after the kickoff. So the first play.
So you also missed the ESPN cameraman just getting hammered in the tunnel.
I did miss that, unfortunately.
I don't know who thought it was a good idea, but they turned all the lights off in the stadium and LSU took the field and the ESPN guy was right in the middle of the road, man. And next thing you know, his camera's pointing up at the roof of the Superdome.
So I missed that part. I see Clemson's first play. My wife's making Cajun chicken wings. Like, life good.
You went Louisiana last night. Let's go.
I bet money on Louisiana on Five Dimes.
Go Tigers.
And so I'm sitting on my couch. I'm watching this game play out. And I kind of look over. And I look up at the clock. I go, this is right. And then I allow more time to go over. And before I know it, my kids come down. And they're giving me a hug and kiss. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? They're like, we're going to bed. We're saying goodnight. I'm like, I look over and it's 8:15 and this game has 30 more minutes to go.
Oh yeah. It was probably like just the start of the second half at 8:15.
And that was my old man moment. Look, no offense to old people out there who aren't bothered by this, but I have no other explanation. I felt like an old guy because I'm on the couch going, God, it's 8:30. Is this game going to be done soon?
You went that route, huh?
I couldn't believe how long that whole thing took. I know football games are increasingly rising in game times, how long it takes. College football games should not take damn near 4 hours to be played. That's just stupid.
I'm glad that you're willing to acknowledge it. I was thinking the same thing last night. Now, this wasn't my old moment, but I was tempted a few times to send out a tweet, but I didn't want people to respond like, okay, boomer, to me. Like, are you really complaining?
And I thought I'd do the same thing, and I also feared the okay, boomer.
The backlash response that would come with it. And I also saw somebody tweet, and I can't remember who it was, but it made me hesitate sending mine out, of like, stop complaining about it. This is the last college football game of the year. Once it's over, the season's done. We don't get it again until August. I love college football, and I thought, okay, just take a deep breath. This game is taking like 8.5 hours, but I guess it's all right. I'll just let this thing ride out. That being said, that game was incredibly long last night.
It took forever, yeah.
No, my old moment, though, was, and this has kind of been a thing all year. I don't know why it sunk in more last night. And I'm sure there's an athlete for everybody, and this is going to age myself even. There is something about, and other sons have done well at the next, like we've seen father-son duos, like we've seen the whole thing. There's something about watching Randy Moss's son be a dominant college football player that makes me feel really old.
Oh, that's a pretty good one. I had that when they played in the first playoff game. He caught it, 2 touchdown passes, and they kept showing him. And I quite literally, and I forgot to talk about it on the show, thought the same thing. I said, his kid is already in college.
That makes me feel really
old. I remember
old.
His rookie year like it was yesterday. It was one of the greatest rookie years I ever saw.
Him like coming out of college and all the controversy around him.
Nobody wanted him. He dropped.
Seeing him in college, and I'm sure everybody, like every generation has those, and he's not the only one. Like there's been other ones where you see the kid come up and they're either going to college or turning pro, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's just, I don't know what it is about Randy Moss or something about him that made me feel old.
Because it's in a sweet spot of your life, right? Like your age range is the sweet spot of Randy Moss. Like, because think about it, what year were you born? 88, right?
Was that 89.
89. Okay. You're born 89. Moss got drafted in 98.
Yeah.
Like you were right at that primo age. Right. You were starting to pay attention to everything. You're starting to memorize stats. You're starting to follow all these players in a way that you really don't when you're 7, 8, 9. Like, you're watching, but you're not quite as engaged as you are when you're 11, 12, 13.
Right.
So he hits on that right spot for you where I understand why you feel that way.
It just was weird, man.
There was a part of me for a long time. I missed probably half his career, but watching Prince Fielder play was weird to me. I'm like, I kind of still remember watching Cecil Fielder play at the old Detroit Stadium. Right. What was that stadium called? It was ugly as all hell.
Yeah, the old Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, old Tiger Stadium. I remember that.
Yeah.
and I'm watching Prince Fielder out here. Like, you have those moments.
Those are weird. I remember one, too, was Ken Griffey Jr.'s kid. I don't know if he ever ended up doing anything, but he played football for a couple of years at Arizona.
Trey?
Trey Griffey. That was one where you're like, wait, what? He's already. And I think probably the one that will sink in the most, too, is because my whole life, LeBron has been a thing. Like, he was drafted in what, 2004?
Three.
So, I was, like, in basically almost high school when he was drafted. Like, LeBron has been a thing my entire life.
Yeah.
Knowing about him in high school, knowing him, watching his whole career. When his son makes it to the pros, that'll be a sweet Jesus, I'm old moment.
That's a pretty good one. I saw a video yesterday. Tiger's kid supposedly is really good, and there was a video that got leaked out of him taking swinging lessons with his dad.
Ten years old or something.
That was golf porn, watching his kids stripe those balls on the range.
Dude, his swing is better than anybody that works at the fans.
Yeah.
He's
Some of us are 9 handicaps here. Okay.
I'm including people with 2 and 3 handicaps.
Calm down a little bit here.
It's a pretty swing. So, like, I'm imagining there's going to be a day where, what's his name, Charlie? It's Charlie, right?
Charlie.
We're going to call him Chuck because we like to have fun. Chuck Woods is going to be a dominant golfer.
I'm going to put money on him to win like the 2035 Masters. I'm ready to go. Put my money down. Let's do this.
There's another one brewing too, and I hate to tell you this. It's not his kid, but it is a nephew, and that's the next Manning bro. He's a freshman in high school, and Archie's already saying he is seeing more talent in him than Peyton or Eli showed ever as a freshman.
Wait, you're telling me there's another Manning brother?
No. Sorry, it's their nephew. It's Cooper's kid.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, calm down, Archie. How long did you wait there to pop the last one out? That's a bit of a gap.
So I see where you're coming from on that. I also ended up Googling because I didn't know the backstory. Did you know the story of his mom?
No, I don't.
Well, not Peyton, not the Manning kid, but the
Thaddeus
Moss.
Moss, yeah.
So I Googled because I noticed Randy wasn't standing next to anybody in particular. I go, wow. Let's see where the mom is. Yeah. And I read that sweet story. $4 million in drug use. Like, it's a pretty unusual situation they've got going. And I think the mom is probably at the game. She's just sitting in an entirely different section, probably because her and Randy are not friends, based on what I read last night.
She's in the Clemson section. By the way, we have other people chiming in with old moments, and I appreciated this one. Somebody said, I just had an old moment. I got married in 1988. So apologies for that. We will make you feel old.
I'm not apologizing if you feel old today. We all have moments. I'm starting to feel old all the time.
There was a thing on, and I tweeted it out, at Theodore Johnson. ESPN did a thing where they went around and interviewed Clemson and LSU players about things that happened in the 90s, like AOL, Britney Spears, Seinfeld, Nas, like just the pop culture things in the 90s. And if you're in our Sprague and I's generation and you want to feel old, go watch that.
Ooh, that one,
They looked at the AOL and they're like, what is this, MySpace? What do you mean? Log on to what? Like, I don't get it.
People were looking at Britney Spears and calling her Lady Gaga. They're like, I don't know who this is, Lady Gaga?
None of them can name Nas. Like, they saw the Seinfeld picture and most of them were like, what is that, like Friends or something? What is this, like, didn't know what show it was.
Damn.
That cut me deep a little bit.
All right. Well, it was a game to make you feel old, but you know what? It was a good game nonetheless till the end there. Clemson comes out swinging. LSU responded, and boy, did they respond in a big way.
Go Tigers!
Joe Burrow ends the best college season for a quarterback in college football history. Ed Orgeron's completely changed the narrative of his name. And is LSU a new dynasty? We got a whole lot to get to today in college football. We got some NFL leftovers, and John Heyman, Radio.com baseball insider, is going to join us at 2. We are going to talk about the Red Sox and the Houston Astros controversy going on in MLB and NFL true or false at 1:30. But let's start with the title game. LSU completes the dream season. Our thoughts on what we saw from them all year and the game itself. We'll start with the title game. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you on Portland's number one sports radio station, 1080 The Fan. I hope your Tuesday's going well. Told you it's not going to snow. It's turning into summer now.
Easy. Although still got like 2 more days.
It was rather cold this morning.
It was cold, yeah. And there was a few flurries, I heard, depending on where you're at in the city.
All right, national championship game last night. LSU looked like they might be in trouble and on the brink of an upset. Clemson went up 17-7. I got flooded with 5 different people texting me, 2 of which I had bets against. the other three just to tell me how wrong I am.
You're an idiot.
I chose not to respond. I think one person, I simply said, it's a pretty early moment to be texting this right now. And LSU responded, and they responded big. They scored two straight touchdowns to take the 21-17 lead. And after that, they never really looked back. They beat Clemson 42-25. Joe Burrow continued his amazing season. Completion percentage slightly down from his 78%.
Yeah, he was only 31 of 49 last night. What a bum.
I know, 63.3%, 463 yards, five touchdowns, no picks. Yeah. He got sacked five times, and he still threw five touchdowns and 400-plus yards on Brent Venables' defense. And LSU caps off just an insanely unpredictable yet one of the best seasons we've ever seen in college football history. Andy Staples is a national college football writer. He writes for The Athletic. Nobody has written a better piece about LSU that I've read so far than him, just talking about how they even got to this point and how it all started in 2015. But they end their dream season undefeated national champs.
It was an incredible story of perseverance. I always feel weird rooting for a team from the SEC, but Joe Burrow and Ed Orgeron made that exception pretty easy last night. Following both of their careers, Orgeron, of course, at USC and at Ole Miss, and kind of bouncing around, nobody really giving him much respect or attention, and he wanted desperately to stay at USC. They kicked him to the curb. He ends up as an assistant at LSU, then he's the interim coach, to work his way up, and then to see some of the tweets and thoughts that people had when he was initially hired at LSU were funny last night. Everybody thought it was a terrible hire. What the hell is LSU doing? You're replacing Les Miles with Ed Orgeron, and here they are a few short years later winning a national championship, and Joe Burrow was the same way. Depending on where you look on recruiting sites, he was a three-star. Some places might have had him a four-star. Some might even have had him a two-star, but he wasn't a high-profile recruit, a la Trevor Lawrence, number one overall player in the country. He had to transfer to find a place to play. He was awful last year, and you listen to these NFL draft experts, man. The thoughts on him in August were maybe a fifth or sixth rounder, maybe.
And Todd McShay said that last night to Van Pelt, was like he was a fourth to fifth round projection at the end of the season. And to watch what he turned. Todd McShay said in 20 years covering this, he's never seen a player go from fourth to fifth round to potentially number one.
Never seen it. And he's going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. I don't know how you pass on him. And there was a moment last night. You know, I didn't get to the point of the people texting you saying you're an idiot. I was rooting for LSU. I thought they would win. I didn't think Clemson would cover. There was a pucker factor there a little bit early on, because I think so over the history of football, when we've seen these matchups of elite defense versus elite offense, more often than not, elite defenses win those games because they can control the line of scrimmage. They can pressure the quarterback. They can make him uncomfortable. And what was happening early on? LSU couldn't get a first down their first couple of drives. Clemson kept punting it and pinning him inside the 10-yard line. They couldn't run the football. Burrow didn't have any time to throw. They weren't executing. They finally hit the one deep pass and got on the board, and that kind of loosened him up a little bit. But some of those fears were around early on in the game of, oh, God, are they going to be able to control the line of scrimmage against Clemson? And then to go on the run that they went on, as you mentioned, down 17-7, they closed the half on a 21-0 run to take a 28-17 lead into the half. They turned it on, and it was one of the more impressive offensive performances. They've been doing it all year, but to cap it with that, it was incredible to watch.
Yeah, because you saw the first quarter, you just kind of feel like, okay, first quarter, Clemson, the way they started, like Clemson's dominating. And then by the end of that game, Dirt, I'm like, LSU kicked their ass.
They smoked them.
It kind of reminded me of KC Houston a little bit, like where Houston came out, threw the first punch, the first few punches. Sure. KC was kind of like looking around going, what the hell is going on? We're down 24. Obviously, much less points at 10-point deficit there for LSU, but it kind of felt that way of LSU didn't really settle in, and before they knew it, they look up, Clemson took full advantage of that. But once they got going, once they got a stop and their defense got off the field, and I thought Joe Brady and the offensive coordinator, what's his name?
M. Singer,
thank you. I thought Joe Brady and M. Singer made really good adjustments for them, and the way that they were getting the ball out of Joe Burrow's hands, the way that they were kind of doing these quick little pop-up screen type plays with their slot wide receivers and just opening things up to get the ball in the playmakers' hands to advance it downfield. I thought that was a great adjustment for them, and after they did that, they never looked back. There's so many different things you could point to here, but one that I'm very interested in is kind of the future of LSU versus where does this stack up for us? Like, I know they're not the best defensive team we've seen win a national championship, but you can't give me an argument against their offense. That offense was groundbreaking. It was Baker Mayfield, Lincoln Riley type stuff. In fact, Joe Burrow did what Baker did, except far more efficiently.
And against a tougher schedule.
Yeah, tougher schedule.
And he won a national championship.
you want to note on their schedule, too. I took that one down because I was curious. Give me a second here.
Well, just in the top 10, I know they ended up beating the number 8, number 6, number 4, number 2, and number 7 teams in the country.
They beat 7 wins versus top 10 ranked opponents, so they were in the top 10 at the time that they played. Mm-hmm. The opponents that they beat, this is what the opponents they beat did this year. Won the ACC, won the Big 12, won the SEC East, won the Orange Bowl, won the Fiesta Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Citrus Bowl, the Alamo Bowl, and the Texas Bowl. Yeah. Those were all opponents that they beat this year, and that's what they did. I'm going to say this without having been able to look at every single resume of all time. I can't fathom there's another team that's won a championship with that many things of accomplishments from the opposing teams that they beat along the way.
It's hard to find, man. From a player standpoint and a team standpoint, it's going to be tough to find. There might be some years where guys had incredible – Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray were deserving Heisman Trophy winners, had great years. They couldn't win when it mattered most. And Baker threw a bad pick late, if I remember correctly, in the Georgia game. Kyler got it going late against Alabama, but it wasn't enough to win them a championship. To go through the slate that LSU had to go through, and not to mention, look, I know Texas wasn't great this year, but they went on the road and won at Texas early in the season. They beat basically the entire top 10, and it's the most prolific passing season we've ever seen. And it didn't come from the WAC or the Mountain West. You know, like Colt Brennan's name kept getting brought up last night for some of the records that Joe Burrow was passing him in. It's like, dude, that was incredible to watch him at Hawaii, but it was at Hawaii. He just did this at LSU and went 15-0 and had to play a semifinal game in the college football playoff and win, and then go win a national championship game against a team that's won damn near 30 straight games. It's one of the most impressive things that I've ever seen. And, you know, on the LSU note, too, so much attention has been paid to their offense, and I think if there was ever any doubt, it was about their defense, because Alabama torched them a little bit. They gave up like 400 rushing yards to Ole Miss, whatever it was, that one random game. That was the only question. They made Trevor Lawrence look like a JV quarterback last night.
Boy, did they answer that one.
Dude, if you like Clemson to win that game, I think first and foremost, you thought maybe they can control the line of scrimmage, and then LSU's defense sucks, so Lawrence is going to be able to rip them apart. They ended up going 1 of 11 on third down. Trevor Lawrence matched the season high for overthrows of any quarterback in college football. I think he finished with 13 or 14 of them, matching like the UNLV quarterback in week 4. Like, he was awful last night, and a lot of that was LSU's defense. I did not see that coming. I thought LSU could win the game.
Yeah.
I figured it'd be closer because Clemson would be able to go score for score with them, and that just wasn't the case.
It's just, it was one of those seasons. That was the only reason I stuck with it. I kept saying, you know, Venables and Dabo, and they've been here, and I completely get it. Everybody that wanted Clemson or picked them to cover, I got it. The only reason I took LSU was one of those stupid explanations. Team of destiny. It just kind of felt like their whole year. Yep. The way that they went into Texas, remember that matchup?
Third and 17.
Third and 17, and you go and get that first down. You beat Texas in Texas, which at the time everybody looked at and said, damn, that's a really impressive win. And they went from there, and they demolished Alabama. They clobbered Georgia. They destroyed Oklahoma, and they ended up killing Clemson.
Yep.
Look at those last few wins, by the way. Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, and Clemson, and you beat all those teams by double digits. Maybe not Alabama, because I think they got a garbage touchdown.
Alabama scored late, I think.
They were big on Alabama for most of that game. They controlled that game. So that was my only reasoning for going, was just it felt like it was just their year. It was meant to be with everything that kind of aligned for them. We'll continue talking about this as LSU wins. We're going to talk with the sideline reporter for LSU, Gordy Rush. He was in the Superdome last night. What did he think of this season? Did he see this coming? And boy, what does he think of Joe Burrow maybe on even on the next level? We'll talk with Gordy Rush, LSU sidelines, next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
This is the Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, ticker time here on The Fan. We're talking national championship LSU with their dream season. They complete the undefeated run, and they beat Clemson 42-25 last night. So our good friend Gordy Rush down there, the sideline reporter for LSU football on Twitter at GLRush3. Give him a follow, is joining us now here on the ticker. Gordy, thanks so much. I know you're probably up pretty late partying pretty hard, but I want to start with the deficit. They fall behind by 10. Was there a part of you that kind of looked around and thought, uh-oh, they could be in trouble here? Or did it seem very calm on that sidelines to the point where you thought, nah, they'll get right back in this?
No, I was calm because, you know, I've been around this football team enough to know that offensively LSU was going to figure out what Brett Venables was doing. Venables is a fantastic defensive coordinator. He likes to bring a lot of pressures. And he showed a little bit different look. He played a lot of dime last night. Hadn't shown the strong safety down in the tackle box and some wrinkles. But, you know, LSU was able to figure it out. In fact, what they did is they went on the edge of Ja'Marr Chase in man-to-man coverage. And obviously Chase set a, bowl record or championship record with 200-plus yards, and Burrow was phenomenal.
Yeah, and you look at that win, too. I don't think people were surprised that LSU won, but I was a little surprised just in how dominant it was. I mean, to blow them out by 17, You made Trevor Lawrence look like he didn't belong on the same stage. They outgained him by 300 yards. Were you surprised with how dominant and emphatic of a win that was?
You know, no, I had 45-31. I felt like the part of the game that nobody was really talking about was LSU's defense, and only because I was with this team all season long. They had four of their front seven guys get hurt against Texas. It was a really soft schedule early before you got an SEC play, so they took their time getting people back. The long and the short of it, LSU's defense didn't get healthy until probably Alabama and really Arkansas, Texas A&M. So the last 4 weeks, or four games, I should say, before the national championship, this has been as good a defense as you got in college football. I mean, you got three, four guys that will be first-round draft picks. Three of them this year may be first-round draft picks. And they started playing together. And I thought that Clemson would get theirs. And I had it at 31. But I thought LSU's defense had the athletes to get after them.
Yeah, Gordy Rush is our guest, LSU sideline reporter for the LSU Radio Network. He's joining us here as the Tigers win the national championship last night. They beat the Tigers. That's kind of weird. But Gordy, I'm curious, a lot of people thought LSU would be really good. I think people always generally throw LSU in that conversation. I don't know if anybody quite saw this kind of season coming. I'm just curious, as a guy who has the access that a lot of people don't, when is a moment where you thought to yourself, we could see something incredibly special, because they broke all kinds of records offensively, and to have this kind of year is just, I didn't see anybody predicting it.
I would say the LSU coaches clinic, and I'd say in mid-April, when they hired Joe Brady, who was an offensive assistant, not an assistant coach, but an analyst type for Sean Payton and the New Orleans Saints. And they started installing some of his offense in the back half of the year last year. But when they hired him as a passing game coordinator, and he brought a reel of Sean Payton's New Orleans Saints offense, you knew that LSU had the wide receiver talent that was underutilized. Mm-hmm. And we all had a feeling that Joe Burrow had a chance to be special. Not Heisman Trophy, not number one draft pick. I didn't see that. I thought, before the season, here's a guy that would have a chance to make an NFL roster and could play on Sunday because he had the smarts and all the above. And he was a little banged up last year when he got in from Ohio State. Mm-hmm. But I thought finally they were going to bring a 2019 offense to Baton Rouge instead of running the 1990 toss dives and things that, that LSU featured under Les Miles.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a modernized offense, man, and it was incredible to watch this year. I've been to New Orleans before. That place is awesome, and I remember going and thinking to myself, if Oregon ever gets to one of these games, I am making myself go just because of that city and that game. What was it like last night down in that city?
Well, I'm born and raised in New Orleans. I mean, it's Mardi Gras, Jazz Fest, and, all of the above, right? I mean, it's just an unbelievable atmosphere. And, I mean, to think that LSU, every time that they won the national championship, the game has been in New Orleans. Right. I mean, so naturally there are a lot of people like me that were overserved and probably didn't get enough sleep last night.
How often do you, I'm assuming, Gordy, I'm just going out on a hunch here because I know a couple people over here in Oregon, Oregon State, who do what you do. I'm assuming you talk to coach every halftime after the game for a minute. Yeah. How often do you understand him versus you kind of just roll with it and say, yeah, and ask the next question?
Well, look, I'm from New Orleans. I've known Bebe for 25 years. And so I'm not Pat Hayden, right? I'm not Pat Hayden. Right. Like, I can't bring this guy to Bel Air Country Club. I'm not going to hire him. So, no, I get him. I get him. We we have a great relationship, and I'm so happy for Ed, you know, to have gone through the adversity that he did in his life with the Ole Miss job, not get the job at USC when he really loved that place and wanted that job, and to wind up being the head coach here and bring a national championship back to the state. It's just a phenomenal story.
Yeah, you guys beat two teams last night, Clemson and USC, making them both look pretty stupid winning the title with Ed O. I am curious, though, when you talk about Ed Orgeron and trying to get this thing in the right direction and maybe establish a dynasty, what is it about him that sticks out? And then how different was this title from the other title that Les won in terms of how it makes maybe the fans feel?
Well, I think the stands out about Ed is that, you know, Tommy Tuberville said down here, the old Auburn coach, 70% of college football is recruiting. I mean, Mario's done an incredible job up your way at Oregon, and so he's done that. And the thing about Ed is that I think because he failed, he learned to delegate, let his coaches coach, and understands what his lane is and what he's trying to get done. You know, he goes as Coach O, and so the big push here is he's the CEO. And he understands that role, and he embraces it. And this team this year, I tell you, they performed at a steady level just about every game. Other than we played Ole Miss, it was 31-7 at halftime. 70% of the Ole Miss fans left the stadium. It was cold, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it became tough football to watch at that point. But other than that, I mean, this team has really played at the same level all year.
Yeah, yeah. The CEO model works, man. When you do it right, it's working down there. I will ask, just going forward, because we've seen programs, and LSU's won champion, you know, Saban won a title there, and Les Miles won a title there. Now Ed O's done it. But we've seen programs that have been able to kind of catapult this into a dominant run. You know, Clemson finally broke through with Deshaun Watson. Now you look at what the last couple of years have been for them. Just looking at LSU, I mean, it feels like everything was evolving, if you will, around Joe Burrow. But what's your gut tell you on Brady? I know he said that he wants to come back next year. So what's your gut say on that? And then what does the future look like next year at LSU?
Well, I think first off, you know, I think Brady's going to get, it's been rumored Matt Rhule wants him with the Panthers. And so the question is, and he wants him to be the OC over in Carolina. And does Joe want to recruit or does Joe want to call ball? And so I think that's interesting. But the thing for LSU, I think the offense is in. Steve Ensminger, you know, called probably 80% of the plays this year. And you know, there's some other guys. In fact, I haven't, because I've been in the quarter, I know that George Munoz, who's really high thought of here in Baton Rouge, was an offensive assistant. I interviewed up with Mario, and I'm not sure if they've named an OC up at Oregon yet.
No, not yet.
But you know, if Brady happens to leave, I think a lot of people would love to see George. Would love to see George, you know, get that gig. I think the offense it remains the same. You know, the question is, what do you do at quarterback? Miles Brennan is in his third year with the program, has a live arm, and has now been in that system. They've recruited well. Do you hold the spot for a transfer portal guy? I think there are a lot of questions in the offseason. Guys, I think what makes it tough to do in a dynasty, and I think the Saban run, you know, was really, really unique because the SEC West is really, really difficult to do that in. And you've got so many great programs over here. Now, look, you got Leach and Lane Kiffin in Mississippi, both the Mississippi schools. So, I mean, the track's gotten a little bit harder here, or I think it's a little bit easier to get that thing done at Clemson. Just having a chance to watch the ACC film in the game this year, and I'm not an ACC hater. And look, there's good football in the Pac-12. You know, to me, the ACC is just a different level, and you can sustain it a lot better at Clemson than at LSU, Alabama, Auburn.
Yeah, great stuff. Gordy Rush, the LSU sideline reporter for the LSU Radio Network, our guest here. The Tigers win the national championship. You can catch Gordy on Twitter at GL Rush. Give him a follow. Thanks so much, Gordy, for the time, man. Congratulations to the school and your journey, having to follow this around all season long and getting to watch them do something incredibly special. Doesn't happen very often.
No, great, man. The detox starts January 15th.
Stay strong, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, there we go. Gordy Rush, the LSU sideline reporter.
Oh, there were some videos last night of Bourbon Street, man. You're jealous watching that and just thinking what that would be like to win a championship, to be in New Orleans celebrating a Bourbon Street. That's as good as it gets.
All right, we got some audio we'll get to coming up next. There was a cop that was none too happy with the way that LSU was celebrating winning their national championship. Some more thoughts on LSU's dream season and a question. Is it obvious? Is it a runaway that Joe Burrow has had the best college quarterback season ever in college history? And I'll tell you why that doesn't mean he's the best college quarterback of all time. We'll talk some more LSU and college football next on The Fan. The thrill is gone. Two biggest improvements, I think, in sports that we've seen throughout this calendar year of sports. So 2019 going into now 2020. And I don't know if anybody's going to be able to top it in the NBA this year. I've seen some good turnaround season. Like Kelly Oubre's having a great turnaround season, most improved type thing. But
I'll take your word for it.
I'm not following that league. Derrick Henry and Joe Burrow, easily the two biggest stories, aren't they?
You know what the other one I would throw in there, I think you have to, is Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson's a good
one. He was good last year. League MVP. To go from that to winning the MVP, the only difference is that Burrow finished the job.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry might finish the job, and Lamar couldn't quite do it.
I don't think it's necessarily fair. Like, you can tell me Burrow is the bigger surprise, and I don't know if I disagree with it. I don't know if we should be using the championship as, like, a barometer of Burrow's season was better, because we know how hard the NFL is, and college is a little different.
If you would put those three things on the board in August, yes, and said which is most likely to least likely.
Yeah, if I wrote on the board, Lamar Jackson is the league MVP. Derrick Henry single-handedly carries the Titans to an AFC championship at a 9-7 record.
Yeah.
Or Joe Burrow has 60 touchdowns, 6 picks, goes undefeated and destroys his 4 hardest games.
Yeah, Joe Burrow would have easily been the least likely of the bunch, without a doubt. Derrick Henry is the most likely because he had a 1,000-yard season last year. He's big, he's dominant. You could see that happening. Lamar, there were glimpses. I didn't see an MVP season coming. I didn't see him take it to this level. But if you made the argument to me, I'd listen to it a little bit. Joe Burrow, I never saw coming in a million years.
Yeah.
He was not good last year.
No,
like,
he wasn't.
Go back and watch Joe Burrow and LSU last season. To go from that to this, and as a team, it's an amazing story.
Well, you know, something I wanted to ask Gordy, but we were up against it, and he might not even have, like, a real answer. I tweeted last night, like, as amazing as this has been for them, and Joe Brady gets a lot of the headlines, right, because he's the 30-year-old whiz kid on offense, and he's the kind of play caller for them. It seems to be more compliments towards Brady, like, oh, Joe Brady offense. Yeah. I just want to know what turned it around for him. That's not just offense. You don't have 60 touchdowns, 6 picks, 5,600 yards, right, and a 74 completion percentage simply from one coach coming in going, here, run these plays. It helps. It obviously has helped. What did he, I want to know
something
the story.
Just clicked, man.
Somebody's got to do a deep dive. Did he go and do, like, meditation? Did he work with a mental coach? He did something that has drastically changed. I said this before. Todd McShay on SVP last night said last year at the end of the season, he was a 4th or 5th round pick at best. And now he's going to be the number one pick. Maybe the argument of Chase Young or Tua is there. But overall, the Ohio kid is available for the Ohio team.
He's going to Cincinnati.
So what is it? It's hard to put into words what we have seen from Joe Burrow this year. That's not just a change of offense, man. There was something else that kid did, and I was really happy for him to finish that off, because that season doesn't happen unless you're really working your ass off in the offseason. And whatever it was that he did, it clearly changed everything for him.
Yeah, and Gordy mentioned that when he came in from Ohio State, there was some lingering injuries apparently, so maybe that played into it last year. He wasn't 100% healthy. Somebody texted in, and I agree with this, just getting settled into the new school. Second year there, you just feel more comfortable with your surroundings. He's an Ohio kid, stayed in Ohio to play college football, then he's transferring down to this whole another world in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It takes a while to adjust. And I think it's a good reminder, too. I argue this all the time about different quarterbacks or players or athletes. Like, we always just want to watch something and act like that's who they are, and we don't ever provide the room for growth. Like, we see a player and we say, well, see, they suck. Baker Mayfield right now, Like, his career's done in a lot of people's minds. We know who Baker Mayfield is. We don't allow him room to grow. And I'm not saying Baker Mayfield is going to turn into a Pro Bowl quarterback, but I feel like we always do that too often. We rush into a judgment or a conclusion on somebody, not realizing that that guy's working his ass off behind the scenes. He's got a new offense that's going to help because it's a more creative scheme that's going to get guys open. And, you know, I think for him, the big one, and Orgeron talked about it last night, the 3rd and 17 at Texas. Like, we can laugh at Texas. That was a monumental game early in the season. That was two top 10 teams. People thought Texas was going to win the Big 10 or the Big 12 this year. And they to convert and to make the plays he did and to torch that defense on that stage. That was one of the big first showdowns of the college football season. And it's amazing what confidence can do. Like, you go into Texas and you win that game and you have this thought of Texas in your head. All of a sudden, you're probably thinking to yourself, like, man, we're a damn good football team. We can do this.
Yeah.
And it breathes the confidence into him and the rest of the team. And it just it flowed out of him the rest of the year.
Well, the other thing, too, because in that Staples piece, it basically breaks down how everything came to be at LSU. Right. How did they get to this moment where they were undefeated and unstoppable? And it goes into coaching, and then they go into some of the players, the coordinators, just how in 2015 this whole thing just got started, and it turned into this. But part of that I was reading was Burrow and how he was at Ohio State competing for the quarterback job, and who did he lose to? Dwayne Haskins. By the way, Dwayne Haskins, Heisman finalist last year.
Yeah, first-round pick.
Franchise quarterback, at least as of today, starting quarterback for Washington in the NFL. Not a bad guy to lose out a gig to. But clearly not on that level that he was this year. Otherwise, Urban would have picked him. But that's a learning experience, right? Then Justin Fields gets the job. He's like, I'm out of here. Right? Dwayne Haskins is here. Justin Fields is here. I'm going to leave. He chooses between Cincinnati and LSU. Mm-hmm. Those were his two choices.
He wanted to go to Nebraska, and Nebraska told him no.
And I was going to say that was another one was that he actually thought about going to Nebraska because his dad played there. Scott Frost, who also has a quote for Oregon, has a quote for Nebraska where he basically said, is he really any better than anybody we have? And Scott Frost wouldn't even entertain giving him a scholarship. By the way, Scott Frost at Oregon, you can't recruit in Eugene. Now they have top 10 classes. So great people can miss the mark on some things. Yeah, but I think the point is simply that he was looked over. He came close in a competition that he lost out on. And maybe the whole settling in thing is right. I think what you're saying, there's probably a lot of truth to that too, of just building that confidence and knowing the system like the back of your hand, where a coach calls a play, you're not worried at all.
Yeah, it's easy to root for stories like that. And it's not taking anything away from guys like Trevor Lawrence, who's had a tremendous one. First 25 games in college football. It's not taking anything away from those guys. But when you have somebody that has to work for everything, that was kind of overlooked, that was doubted, that had to bounce around a little bit, that never really was given that benefit of the doubt as an elite quarterback to come out and do this, it's just an incredible level of perseverance. And we see that all the time in the NFL, where you have guys that are even good in college, but they go overlooked in the draft. And what do? They use that as motivation. Tom Brady still uses that as motivation, despite winning 6 Super Bowls and going to, 9 of them over the last 20 years. He still uses that motivation of, you overlooked me. And I think there's something to that with Joe Burrow. Nebraska, his dream school, told him no. Like, that's a slap in the face. And
that's
went down.
Bad.
He uses the motivation, and it culminated in a dream season. And I think for LSU now, you asked a question about dynasties. You can do it one-off. It's very tough to stay on top of the mountain. And I think job number one is to figure out what's going to happen with Joe Brady. Are you going to be able to keep him? Is he going to go, Gordy mentioned him going to Carolina, maybe being the OC. I've heard him rumored to the Giants. Like, he's been kind of rumored around. Maybe he stays, maybe he doesn't. So you got to figure out an OC. And Joe Burrow was an incredible quarterback, and that's not easy to replace in a program.
All right, coming up, hour number two, we have a lot more to get into. Washington State makes their hire to replace Mike Leach. We'll talk about that. How did the Pac-12 refs do in this game? Because I'm seeing a mixed reviews from people of the Pac-12 ref performances, but we'll start the second hour. We got NFL true or false, by the way, too, at 1:30. We're going to start hour two, though, talking about the college football season. It is officially done. It's over. What do we think of this year and how are we kind of looking at next year? Hour two straight ahead on The Fan.